Here we go. It is podcasting time, coming to you from the Powerworks Garage with Glenn Power. Powerworks Garage? Glenn Power, Powerworks. Yeah, you get it. If you're listening to us on your favorite streaming service, welcome. If you're listening on the radio 100.3 in Dubai, welcome. You're watching us on YouTube or Spotify, welcome. And we love your comments. So like us, follow us, comment, ask questions, and we'll get back to you, truly. Glenn, it's been a while.
It has been a while, yeah. It has. How many weeks?
You know, in the land of podcasting, you never really notice because content is coming up, content's being posted. But it's been a couple of weeks since we sat down and we got to talk about cars. Quick update on the Corolla CVT issue. And if you're listening to the podcast, you will know that recently we had a long discussion about CVT. And we related this to a Corolla, the one my son bought. CVT issue, the solenoid in that CVT, in the transfer case, I suspect. And this led to it not shifting properly or advancing properly. And those things are delicate, expensive, and a pain in the neck. And upon further research, I've determined that this is a common issue, which makes me think this is a design flaw in general in CVTs.
There's many other design flaws. I mean, most things that go wrong with transmissions are common across that transmission. They are pretty good, usually.
Yeah, I mean, this thing, it's like everything. You could get really lucky, or you can be one of that 2% that has the problem. So here's an interesting, I get a message this morning. Hey, Dad. Engine light went off and it's working fine right now because he hasn't gotten a change yet. It's gone off and it's working fine. At which point I instantly think there must be a connection issue, whether it's with the solenoid in the transfer case or with something else. But for it to go off and now be functioning correctly, that's odd. No?
Strange, but it happens. And the problem is now when that light comes back, it's back with a vengeance.
Yeah, and that's what I told him. I said, dude, we got to get this fixed. But
logically, you'd think that potentially there's something where maybe it's dropped a little bit cooler where he is.
Yeah.
The oil's gotten a little bit more viscous.
Yeah.
It's working in a more efficient way, shall we say, for that system. I don't know. But logic doesn't always dictate. So,
yeah.
But it could be, it could be a loose connection. It could be that there's moisture somewhere.
It's also getting cooler, so maybe, I don't know. Anyway, he's happy for now because the engine light is off and the CVT is working fine.
They never work fine.
You're going to love this one. So, everyone may or may not know, but I did get a promotion at the university and I've now become the dean of the College of Communication. And, there's certain perks that come with that. The number one perk that everyone unanimously agrees to, and when they say, how's the new job? And I say, hey, you won't believe this one. Everyone just goes, oh, really? Covered parking.
That's what I need.
Yeah. I got the key fob that lets me in the private gate into the covered parking, and everybody is envious.
Nice. Nice. I mean, I've been to the university.
Yeah.
I used to park out in the, with the great unwashed masses.
Yeah. And it's brutal, especially when it's really hot. Like, you are getting baked.
Yeah.
So, that's a good one.
Life changing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Hey, speaking of parking in the parking lot with the masses, gave you a phone call the other day, actually dropped you a WhatsApp and said, oh, man, I got a problem with my rear white right rim. And this one, I was just befuddled by it. Here's the story, and we all have this story going with us that, and we talked about this before, you and I, something goes wrong with my car or something is not working quite right, we're more than willing to just let it go until the doomsday moment.
We manage it.
Yeah.
Manage the situation.
Yeah. Now, as soon as the wife is driving the vehicle, you have to think very long and hard about driving with a manageable situation that you can manage and one that she might have to manage, because it's going to go from zero to nuclear in an instant if it fails.
Yeah.
I'm at the Enoch station. You know, you could say it's a Shell station, a Petro-Canada. What are the stations in the UK?
Shell, BP. BP, yeah, so Texaco.
So I decide to go, and I'm just there, and I'm just doing the mindful thing, saying, I better just check my tire pressure. Because I think it's been a little bit while. The temperatures are cooling. There could, you know, all sorts of things. So I'm going around. I'm doing the tire pressure. I've got my own tire gauge, so I'm making sure that I'm getting the right amount. Get to the rear right tire, and I'm looking at it. I'm going, something's wrong here. And I'm looking at the valve stem, and you know that little piece, the actual valve that's inside the stem.
Yeah, the Schrader valve.
The Schrader, it's sticking out, and I'm going, okay. And so instantly I'm going to the car and I'm looking for my valve remover, and then I'm kind of going, hold on a second, but there's no air coming out. So this is a little weird. Upon closer examination, I notice that the valve stem has been sheared off, and I'm going, what the heck? Has someone sabotaged my car? Now, I noticed this also on a little bit of an angle. So it's clearly hit something. And I'm not suggesting that my wife may have been driving like a maniac over speed bumps or curbing or off-road. I'm not suggesting that for a minute.
Yeah, it'd be silly to suggest that.
But I did notice some cut down wood on a cut through that we take. And I'm wondering if she didn't brush up against that. Anyway, not that I would assign blame anywhere, but this posed a big problem because at this moment, no longer could you put air or anything in that tire. And I mean, look, I could pull out the valve, fill it up, put the valve back in, you know, Bob's your uncle. But again, you and I are willing to do that. So sent a message over to saying, this is what we've got. Oh, and add to the dilemma, sensors on these. This has got tire sensors. Now, of course, none of them work because it's 2008 year model. Batteries have run out. They're just a pain in the neck. But they're still sensors, so you can't just replace the metal piece in the valve stem in the valve. The whole thing. And fortunately, you can do that with a rubber piece. But so I'm looking at this going, oh, man, this now entails. And the wife said, well, why didn't we just stop at the garage and get them to do the change when you were there? And I'm going, this is not going to be a 5-minute job. It whatever we do, it's not going to be 5 minutes because they're still going to have to take the tire off. So give you a call. Sandan's Tire to the Rescue. The mobile tire unit shows up at the university. I park way off in the boonies so the guy could pull up right beside. And we did a swap with the, as I explained it to you, Ron, you said, you understood what I wanted to. Basically, I just wanted to swap the spare and the spare rim with the rear right rim and put the other tires on and then put them all back. And, you know, easy job, but someone still has to do it.
Yeah, you got to be
and
done.
Balance and take it out and put the new rubber stem in the one that I put on the back. So, but they got it all done and it was painless. And everyone I mentioned this to, they're going, wouldn't get that done at home. And I mean, 9:18 in the morning, it was done. You know, my luck, the guy who was doing it was heading to work and I was on the route to work. So he just came on the way. It was easy.
Happy days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with mobile tires. There's certain things that you can't always guarantee with mobile work, such as wheel alignment. You can't do mobile wheel alignment with most mobile tire stations. So if you're getting like a couple of tires changed, you really probably ought to be going and getting a wheel alignment done after that. But, you know, for that situation, which is what they're for people at the side of the road that have, you know, got an emergency problem. It's much quicker, more efficient and safer than loading it onto a truck, getting the car driven, then offloaded off of a truck, finding a tire shop that maybe they haven't got the tire. You ring the mobile guys, they'll come to you with the tire that you've already told them you need potentially, or anything else that you might need, and there you go, done.
Yeah, it's easy. I think more and more, and you know, oil changes, all of these things can be done with mobile services.
There's a lot of people doing that. Yeah, there's more and more perceived demand. Certainly people are pushing it as a service. Whether there's the demand for it or not, I don't know.
I think the marketing needs to be done at... So, for instance, let's take where I am. So I'm at the university. We've got probably 100 cars in the parking lot between students and faculty, and let's just use that number, that are sitting there for 8 hours. And how many of those vehicles need an oil change, right?
Yeah, no.
And I always think if you started marketing it at these different parking lots, so just take Academic City or wherever you are and start marketing it to the buildings in the parking lot saying, hey, we got this service. Here's the rate. We've got, you know, we know we're going to get 50 vehicles a month or 100 a month. This is what we're going to do. And it's at the convenience for you when we're there. We'll also, you know, do the inspection for you, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think it all comes down to marketing.
Yeah, it does. But one of the issues is if you imagine that you're responsible for managing a car park, someone's going to be, carrying out regular work on there. There's a difference between somebody going in and doing an emergency tire change and an oil change, where you potential for spilling oil. There's potential for, and the other thing is that when you're not in a workshop situation with a full, let's say, coverage of any tool that you might need if something was to go wrong. If the oil filter's on there too tight, you can't get it off, but you damage it with the tool because it's so tight. It happens to us all the time. That engine can't be run then. The filter's going to leak as soon as you turn the key. So you can't account for that with a mobile service necessarily when it's on axle stands on a car park in the sun at 40 degrees plus.
Right.
So it's quite seasonal at the best of times. There are going to be a lot of hurdles and obstacles to overcome. I think the first, if you're doing mobile oil changes, there's got to be a price point on it to make it okay. So you're already low margin. The first time you spill some oil and you've got a cleaning bill from a building or a car park management to pay, the first time you take
and you're going to spill oil.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And then the first time you get a drain plug that strip the threads when you take it out, that's not nice on your back in a car park. I wouldn't want to be doing it. And sometimes you can't anyway, so you have to take the whole sump off. That needs to go to a garage, so then you've got to put it on a truck because you can't drive it. So there are going to be these pitfalls along the way. And I think that, you know, you're going to be over 10% of your job's going to have a problem. And I don't see what margins you can have much more than 10% to make it worth people's while. I don't think because you do it, so you'll get regular oil changes, just lube change, right? You'll just go and have a lube service. Realistically, how long does it take to go and do it at MRAT or,
15 minutes,
which is what you're going to put petrol in anyway. Go and grab a coffee and a croissant or whatever.
No, I stand there and watch them do everything.
But you know what I mean? Most people are capable of doing that, right? So I don't understand.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, you can leave the car parked in the car park.
Yeah. Maybe this is, in my mind, it sounds like a good idea, but in reality, it's not a good idea.
There's been a lot of people out there. There used to be some orange trucks driving around. I can't remember what they were called. It was something like
Jiffy Lube.
Lube on wheels? Something similar.
Something that could be taken badly.
Yeah. Yeah, they sort of, I haven't seen any of those around for ages. I think there's a company here that everyone knows that do the delivered fuel to your house.
Yeah.
They started to offer it. I don't know anyone that's used it. I just don't know anyone that's used it. And the thing is, the convenience of it is, great, it is convenient. But I bet if you asked your workshop or garage that you would traditionally use, They'd come and pick the car up for you at the weekend.
Here's the other side of, maybe I need to backtrack on my thinking. And everyone's listening to this and the wheels are, this is the wheels of innovation at work. We're thinking this is a great idea. And now I'm thinking, hold on, maybe this isn't such a great idea. The other reason I do like taking it to a station where I can crawl under and look, or, periodically, if the vehicles are coming into your garage here at Powerworks, I'll just say, throw in the oil change. Would you mind doing an oil change on it because it needs to be done? But at that moment that you're bringing a car in for something, and especially if you have a late year model vehicle, stuff's always going wrong. But when you bring it in and the guys are doing the oil change, they're also doing a visual of everything. And I always like to think that, they're going to notice a seals going, or they're going to notice a bushing, or they're going to notice some tire wear. Yeah. And while that's not what they're looking for, they can't help but notice it. And they're going to make a note of it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There's a lot to be said for regular oil changes. In my opinion, you can't change it often enough. Obviously, the finite resources of the planet would differ, but you can't change oil often enough in an engine, but the point of an oil change is, you know, we can appreciate the value of it, but you've really got to understand the value of the whole, even if it's just a matter of while the oil's draining out of the bottom of the engine, someone's having a quick look round underneath,
yeah,
you know, for 5-10 minutes, just a quick visual check, because anything that's dangerous is going to be picked up. And it's really important that that isn't undervalued.
Yeah, really important. Yeah, what's going on in the shop these days? What are you seeing lots of? The weather is getting cooler. People are maybe driving their vehicles a little bit more off road. They got the windows down. They're turning off ACs. Maybe anything seasonal coming in, or you
seasonal stuff's not really started yet. We've a few people with issues with the windows, and a couple of people with. Actually, to be fair, we get quite a lot of tyre issues. So we've had a few off-road, well, not off-road vehicles, but 4x4s that have been clearly used off-road where the tyres haven't been reinflated or not been reinflated soon enough. And then, you know, they'll drive on flat tyres on the road and damage the tyres. We've had that quite a lot recently. That's just a typical seasonal repair. One of the problems with that is a lot of people will let their own, they think, oh, it's great, you know, I've got this, I can let my own tyres down. They don't necessarily have a means to inflate them, but oh yeah, there's a service station just on the main road where we go into the desert. That's great, but then when you come out of the desert 2 kilometers further down the road than you went in, or you know, you just drive past and forget, and then it's a 3 kilometers to do a U-turn to get back to it, right?
So it's never 3 kilometers in the UAE. It's always a minimum of 10.
No, right? So yeah. It happens all the time. So that's quite a seasonal thing where people have forgotten to inflate their tires again.
Man.
So yeah, and it's an expensive mistake, I guess you'd say, because
it's like a you know, if you're you can be talking over 1,000 dirhams for that, because you got to replace two. You can never do
easily
one.
Easily 1,000 dirhams a tire. Yeah. For if you were to take something, the most sort of common off-road vehicle we would see would be something like not off-road 4x4, would be something like a Touareg or a Cayenne or a Discovery.
Yeah.
Those tires are over 1,000 dirhams each. If you go in the OE tire from the factory, you can be 1,500 to plus for a tire, you know, so.
Coming up to the holidays, no one wants to be spending that on tires.
Nah. So, you know, it's just that's one of the seasonal things. Windows, again, where people haven't used them during the summer and now they're using them because it's nicer to put the window down in the morning than have the AC on. And they're noticing that they don't work because it's had a whole summer of just getting dust and then washed every week.
Well, and I always think about windows. So you've got the switches, you've got the motors, you've got pulleys, you've got lifters, all inside the door that is getting just scalding hot, plastics and rubbers and things deteriorating.
Yeah,
it's amazing they last as long as they do.
Yeah, they're the big seasonal failure.
Yeah.
Electric windows. You know, the thing is that apart from the fact that there's a motor and a switch, they effectively work exactly the same as a manual window.
Mm.
So you know, the only problem with the manuals is that people are lazy now, right? Manuals are so much quicker than electric ones, and there's less to break on them, but you know, they don't exist really nowadays.
Does any manufacturer sell Armstrong windows?
I can't think
of the last time I saw any.
I think the rental car that we had in the UK in the summer had manual windows in the rear.
Oh yeah,
but
okay.
You know, that's a bottom spec thing for a rental car. I can't remember
the last time I had those.
Yeah, it's just, it was a Vauxhall as well. So.
But I do remember back in the day, my parents having vehicles where you had to roll the windows up and down. And I distinctly remember you're driving, so I was probably like 16. You're driving and leaning over to the passenger side to crank the window down a little bit. Of course, you don't stop. You do it while you're driving.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember those days very well.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, it's hard to fathom how quickly it's moved on.
Yeah.
You know, in 20 years, electric windows have gone from being an added option to standard spec.
Yeah. You don't get electric windows. You're going, what am I driving here?
Yeah,
people won't buy the vehicle.
Everything's standard spec now. But then, you know, you go back 50 years and stereos didn't used to be standard spec. Yeah. Used to get a hole in the dashboard unless you spec to stereo. So, you know, and sometimes I think now with Ford, you still get the hole in the dashboard because you can't get this get the electric parts for it. So, we've got a transit van, right? That needs a radiator fan. So a Ford transit van.
Radiator fan.
That
should be common.
Every other vehicle on the road in the UK is a Ford Transit.
Yeah, those must be a dime a dozen.
We can't get a radiator fan. It's on back order.
How can that be?
So it's not that it's in a factory somewhere waiting to be shipped to a warehouse. It's the factory haven't made any. We've got to make more.
Okay.
No idea of when we're going to get them. And then a couple of weeks ago, we had an F-150 in that we needed brakes for. And we couldn't get them from the agency.
You could get them from Ford?
Brakes for an F-150.
Borg and Beck?
Couldn't get them from Ford.
Wow.
What's that all about?
That's shocking.
Really, really, really poor.
So supply chain is just has broken down.
No, obviously the strike hasn't helped, but I don't think we'd be feeling the pinch of the shutdown yet. I think that's still to come. So how bad is it going to get?
Yeah. But it'd be great if you're an off sales, like Borg and Beck. I mean, this is
time
to ramp
up. Yeah, things like
up.
Service items, yeah. But when it comes to electrical parts like radiator fans and everything like that, there are very few options available. Yeah.
So what did you do?
We haven't done anything.
It's just sitting there.
Yeah.
So now that transit fan is out of commission.
Yeah, I mean, what do? You don't get a second-hand radiator fan. It's an electrical part. You put it on and then 2 days later it fails. Well, we don't get any guarantee with it. We can't afford to give a guarantee on a part that's going to cost us a couple of thousand dirhams.
That's troubling. Mm. I mean,
and this is a commercial vehicle, so it's costing somebody money to be off the road. It's strange, very, very strange. Like, you think you're over the whole supply chain.
Yeah.
Thing. And then you realize that problems are much more deep rooted
I don't think we realize how many companies, and I'm not just talking garages, but everything that we're buying is literally made in a fashion that it is being, an order is put in, that part is being produced, that part's being shipped, and everything is so close in the timing that no longer do we see a situation where we have a warehouse full of these parts just sitting there waiting. With very few of those are now waiting, and most of them are coming direct from manufacturer.
It's the whole Lean Six Sigma rubbish that people do, and the whole just enough, just on time.
Yeah.
In this case,
it doesn't work.
But it doesn't work. And the only time you hear about that is the fact that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a situation where a huge company is selling a vehicle that they effectively cannot guarantee that you'll be able to service and maintain.
I mean, that's
what's that all about? How is that even allowed to happen?
I don't know.
You know, like
hold on, I'm telling you something. You're going to need to possibly fix something. And it's even on warranty, but we don't have the parts. So
there's no guarantee. Yeah, you've got warranty, but there's no guarantee we'll have the parts.
That's scary.
We don't get, apart from Borg and Beck, we don't get warranty on any part that we buy here.
And I want to repeat that. Everyone who's listening, Glenn Power here from Powerworks Garage, Master Mechanic. We're talking about car repair. We're talking about your cars. We're essentially trying to give you the information so that you don't get ripped off when you go to garages or when you're getting things fixed or when you're thinking about the automotive industry, giving you some background and insight. I want to repeat this point because I don't think people realize it, that, as you're saying, repeat it again. You don't get a warranty.
We don't get warranty. On our Borg and Beck parts, we get a no-quibble years warranty on anything.
But that's solid.
On every other part that we buy in the market, through a dealer, through a second or third party, we don't get any warranty on it.
So let's just say for you know, we were talking about Ford. So you go to the Ford dealership and you're buying, you know, Ford brakes.
Yeah, and you get
zero warranty from Ford? Yeah,
I have to say.
Or Chrysler or Volvo.
Of all the dealers that we deal with, Ford section of Altair are the best. They're very, very helpful to us, and they have worked with us well in the past, and they continue to do so. But if we buy anything from them, we don't get warranty on it.
Wow.
In the case of
that's frightening.
In the case of a component, let's say an alternator, we fit it and it doesn't work and there's something wrong with it, we would tell them about it. We'd then have to book the vehicle in. We'd then have to pay them a fee for them to do an inspection on it to then justify the warranty on it. They would put a claim in. Otherwise, it's not covered.
And the whole time, me as the owner of the vehicle, I don't have my vehicle. So this is days.
Yeah. And the problem is, you see, and the reason I bring this point up is we don't work on anyone's car without giving them a warranty on it.
Right.
We'll guarantee our work for a year and we'll guarantee the parts for 6 months. So if and when there are a problem, and look, we're fitting thousands of parts a month. If something by the law of averages is going to break because it's not up to task, when we cover that under warranty, it's a direct loss to us. But we have no problem with that because that's doing what we can't offer a service and then not back it up.
Yeah. So you're given the warranty, but you're not getting the warranty on the parts.
But how a vehicle manufacturer is allowed to sell a product in the market and not be able to guarantee the parts availability? It's one thing that, you know, things do go on back order. I remember working at VW and AC filters went on back order for the Passat, you know, in like 2006. We were given a written approval from the manufacturer to buy the equivalent part from direct from the people that made them for VW, which was Man Filters. We had a written approval that was up in the service reception for customers to see. We attached a copy to their invoice when they paid for a part to say that this is not a part sourced through Volkswagen, but it's a part sourced through one of their suppliers. It will be covered by the same warranty. But, you know, so it does happen, but there has to be a solution to it. To not be able to get a cooling fan, a radiator cooling fan, for a transit van, for me, is unforgivable. I don't see how that makes any sense whatsoever. How can you do your job without the van?
Yeah.
You know, you've got a customer that's buying the vehicle to keep themselves on the road and earning, making ends meet, making a living, whichever way you look at it, but you don't provide them the ability to service that vehicle.
It's insane. And
I'm sure this isn't a problem just unique to Ford. It's just that we're dealing with that one at the moment.
But I think this is something that bears understanding, is that you're getting your vehicle fixed here. And we're talking Dubai, talking the UAE. You're getting your vehicle fixed here. And your garage, if you want to ask them, your mechanic, ask them, do I get a warranty on this repair? And what are the terms of the warranty? But keep in mind that they themselves aren't getting the warranty on this thing. So they are trusting quality parts, they're trusting their workmanship, but I think it's good to be clear with that right up front, so you know what's being dealt with. And if your garage isn't giving you a warranty on these things, like maybe they just say got a week, but if they're not, you might want to think twice and ask that question. And I could understand 100% why a garage would say, look, we're not giving a warranty because we don't get a warranty. We'll give a warranty on our workmanship, but we're not giving a warranty on the part because we don't get a warranty on that part. And I think make your choices wisely.
I think that's a reasonable position. We just don't, we don't take it. We like to think that, okay, well, we'll win some and we'll lose some. And we just have to make sure that we do a sufficiently good job that the vehicle will come back. And over the next 4 or 5 visits, by that time we've recuperated the margin that we lost through purchasing a part again and replacing for free. But what, you know, it is what it is. It's also worth noting that, you know, if a vehicle comes to us with a component that then fails, it's not just the cost of the part that we cover. You've obviously got to remove and refit it again.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, so yeah. There's
labor.
Yeah.
And consumables.
Mm.
Yeah. So Gleb Power, Powerworks Garage, joining me here on the Powerworks podcast. Keep in mind all that goes into the parts that are being put and fitted to your vehicle, because there's a lot going on that you might not be aware of. It's not as simple as, hey, I'm buying this part, there's a warranty involved with it. Not necessarily. And it might be your garage is warranting things, and that could account for a whole bunch that's going on there as well. So be mindful. Ask questions.
Things are slow at the moment with parts. It's difficult for everybody.
Yeah. And it's not always better, because then sometimes folks will say, and you've had people do this, well, I'll just get the part in, you know, from India. I know we've got this part in India. I'll get the part in India, or I'll get the part in the UK and I'll bring it back with me. That can work in some instances, but you need to be very sure that you're getting the right part. And sometimes it doesn't work. So it's no longer an advantage by doing that.
We've got a Porsche Cayenne sat on the first ramp in there we came in with an oil leak. When we took the valve cover off, we could see that the camshaft had worn out because two of the lifters were seized up. So we took them out, explained it to the customer. The customer provided their own parts.
Mm.
The camshaft came, it was wrong. Then we got the lifters, which were supposedly a full set of reconditioned lifters, and all of them were stuck and they hadn't been reconditioned at all. So, you know, the car sat on the ramp in a state of basically dismantled and unable to move.
And that's a whole bay in your garage that's now out of commission.
Yeah. And this, you know, we don't do it. A lot of garages do, and I understand why. They charge a different and a higher labor rate for customers that provide their own parts.
Mm.
Partly because you're losing out on margin.
Yeah.
Of course, we're all making money on selling the parts, but also because of this, it covers you for this risk where the parts don't come right or they take longer to come than you expected. And but like I say, these days, parts is a big problem. I'd be interested to know what it's like in the dealers. Yeah. You see, we kind of have options to, let's say, temporarily or limp cars out of the garage and make sure that they're okay in terms of we can use second hand, right?
Right.
So if you come to me, James, and say, oh, I've got a problem, my fuel tank's leaking, I say, okay, well, you know, the new one's not available for 45 days, but we can get you a second hand one. It might not last forever, but it'll last and get you on the road. Dealers can't do that.
No.
So what, the dealer's got a car in the workshop for 45 days, you know?
Can you imagine? I mean, they push it into the corner, but still.
Frightening.
Absolutely. I mean, wow. I'm actually kind of shocked at all of this. And we're talking just in your operation, but as you said.
Yeah, just a small little speck.
Al Tire's got a whole block of that the garage that's around the corner from here. It's giant.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking, how many cars are in there getting repaired at a time? There's got to be 100 at a time because it's across there. Well, I think it's just the Audi, too. Audi Volkswagen.
So Alnabuda's Audi, Audi. Yeah, I think it's 70 bays.
Yeah. Yeah, Alnabuda. Sorry, not Al Tire. It's Alnabuda.
Yeah.
Like those Alnabuda guys, by the way. Really happy with them.
Yeah.
But it's giant.
Huge place. And
brand new.
What do you do about the parts not being available? It's madness.
Yeah. Speaking of Alnabuda, and it's got nothing to do with Alnabuda. It just has to do with Volkswagen. And there was a little article that came out about the VW Scout.
Mm.
Which is going to be an EV built in the U.S., but EV or not, this little Scout looks really cool.
Yeah, they'll sell just off of the whole, you know, it's nostalgia.
And it kind of reminds me a little, it looks a little bit like a Bronco, but I, you know, the Scout, if you go back, Scout was made originally, I think, by International, but
yeah.
I'd get one of these a drop of a hat.
And this is a good ploy from VW in terms of keeping a foothold and you know, scratching backs in the US market.
Yeah,
you know, it's a big deal. And you know, at the end of the day, they've got to start doing something because they're not going to be selling the Golf anymore.
I'm still scratching my head at that one. So
this will sell. They'll sell like hotcakes. There'll be a waiting list.
It just looks good. Yeah. I mean, it just looks fun. But on another note, Jeep recalling 45,000 Wrangler 4XEs, which is their, you know, electric hybrid thing, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why you'd make an electric one anyway, but fire risk.
Mm.
And I just kind of went, this is a big issue with electric vehicles.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they're great to have, and there are elements to them that are interesting. I mean, of course, if you can charge is the big thing. And I'm reading stories about people who just like to go for a drive or get out in the middle of nowhere. And charging is now an issue because, you can always plug in, but it might take you 5 days to get enough charge. You had that issue just here, not plugging into a supercharger.
Yeah.
And more, you know, around the corner from my place, there is a new service station. They've got a couple of EV bays right in front.
Yeah.
They're always full with taxis, I think, but they're always got vehicles in them. And I'm thinking, well, what if I needed to charge? Good luck.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine that I used to work at VW with. And we were on about the idea of an electric car kind of it suits the modern view of a vehicle, which is just get to and from work.
Yeah.
Or whatever you to and from in.
Absolutely. Whereas short commutes.
Yeah.
I mean, little city things, like people, an electric moke.
Perfect. Yeah. Whereas my when I got one, I wanted to have a driving license as soon as possible. You know, you could get a preliminary license, which allowed you to go out with your parents with L plates on their car at 16 and a half. You could get a license at 17 once you'd passed the test. I wanted it at 17. I'd got it. I'd got my license and I just got in the car and I used to just drive around.
Yeah.
Just drive around. I'd be out.
That's what everyone does. Go early hours. Yeah, you just go on cruising.
Early hours of the morning, you'd park up with a load of other people your sort of age within 4 or 5 years and you'd just be sat chatting.
Yeah.
3, 4 in the morning. And then you drive home.
Yeah.
You know, I remember driving out with a friend once and being like, never been down this road before. This is obviously pre-smartphone.
Yeah.
You know, there might have been a map in the glove box. I don't know. I wouldn't have used it. He was like, let's see if we can get lost.
Yeah.
You know, people don't do that now. People aren't interested. There's no freedom associated with driving now. It's seen driving a car now is looked upon almost as smoking a cigarette. Particularly in the European and as I say, my example being the UK, it's smoking a cigarette and to a certain extent binge drinking with alcohol. Mm. It's looked upon as the same way.
I remember probably, you know, a dozen years ago getting a rental in Europe and doing, you know, a summer of driving with the Michelin guide. And that was it. We had the Michelin guide. We weren't using a smartphone. We didn't have electronic maps. I don't think we even had a cell phone. We didn't have a cell phone that worked in Europe. Yeah. And we just had this giant guide and we were taking secondary roads. We were taking back roads. We were, you know, planning alternative routes and all done with the latest version of the Michelin guide. It was phenomenal.
Yeah. But you were enjoying.
Yeah.
There was the whole aspect of while we're driving.
Yeah. Well, and we ended up in places that we would never have ended up if we'd been using Google Maps.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, you end up in like rivers and lakes if you use Google Maps, don't you? But, you know, I don't think you can't have that freedom with an electric car. Not yet.
Yeah.
Not until there's some form of inductive charging from the road surface, which, exactly. You know, there's never going to be that. When they can't even put enough cables down to make charging stations. But, you know, you can't have that ultimate freedom. You're always constantly going to be thinking, well, yeah, I've got 100 miles left, but I'm 50 from a charging point and that's going to take 20 minutes to give me enough to get home. You can't. Yeah. I mean, who's doing that? Yeah. It's like, you know, when you've got a car that takes 5 minutes to put this liquid in that you can get pretty much anywhere. No, for me, I think it's all a matter of an attitude. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that people view cars very, very differently. And everybody's gone in full, headstrong, no doubt committed to the fact that cars are the reason that whales are getting beached on the ocean. And it's just, it's a complete seed change, and I don't think it comes back. I think the people that have got
it's a dying industry.
Yeah, the people that enjoy driving a car with a manual gearbox with a big throaty engine in the front, they're going to forever enjoy driving a car.
Yep.
You know, someone that sees two cars side by side and one's electric and one's an internal combustion. Don't get me wrong, the thrill of the electric vehicle is insane. They are super fast. And when you're talking, you know, some of the plaid Teslas doing not 60 in less than 2 seconds, who doesn't want to experience that?
Who wouldn't want to get thrown into the seat like you're on a roller coaster?
I'm talking about, you know, taking an old 911 with a manual gearbox and throwing it around a country lane and just driving it for the sake of driving it and listening to the engine and listening to the gearbox and listening to the brakes and listening to the tires on the road and hearing it and feeling it around a corner.
Yeah. Well, look, I got a son in his 20s. He's got the Corolla, I first time I see the Corolla, I get in, I sit down, I was like, oh, let's get a feel. What's it look like? What's the dash like? How does it feel? And he looks at me and goes, Dan, it's just a car. It's just yeah, a commuter car. Doesn't matter. Yeah. I go, what do you mean it doesn't matter? Yeah, like, yeah. I want to see the floor mats, where you're... I'm thinking, you're going to spend hours in this thing. The cheapest thing that you could afford or the most luxurious vehicle, it's still got to make put a smile on your face. And he's going, Dan, it's just a car.
Thing is, though, if they'd have had podcasts in the sort of pioneer days, it'd have been two old grumpy people sat talking about how no one rides horses anymore.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
They're all interested in these steam engines and, yeah. You know. But so, like I said, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying I think those electric vehicles now have and will take away some of our freedom that we get from. And I'm not talking about the whole...
Just back to the wandering. You can't just
wander. I'm not talking about the whole... American Constitution, William Wallace freedom. I'm talking about the fact that you can get in a car and just go and drive and get lost and know that I'll always be able to find petrol somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I just, I broke down. I'll just get my red can out the back and I'll go and find somewhere.
Exactly.
You can't do that with electric cars.
We're sticking around here for a few days. I was looking at a website, something on Instagram came up and it was, do you remember when? And it was showing the keys for a car when you used to have an ignition key and a door key and a boot key. And I went, man, when did they stop doing that? Because I absolutely remember
and
having
a little small one for the glove box.
Yeah, you had to have three keys. And, you know, the square one for the ignition, round one, round fob on it for the back. And then, the little one for the glove box.
Yeah.
Those were the days.
No. Glove boxes don't even have handles on them anymore.
Yeah. Oh, man. Just the little things.
Yeah.
I mean, the efficiency is great, but I remember people... especially if it was a cab company, they would just leave the key because, well, you had to use the key to open it anyway. You couldn't just push a button. Now you can just push something. It's unlocked and release on the inside. I remember when release on the inside of the vehicle for your we'd call it a trunk in North America, but your boot here, when you had an automatic release, that was big.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a big development.
Yeah, I remember my dad sort of opening the driver's door and saying, watch this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an electric. This is an electric boot. This is just opening.
Yeah, this is just mechanical. Just
popping. It's just popping, and then you still have to walk and lift it. But that was amazing.
It was like, oh man, those were the days. I remember. I was like, whoa, we don't need the key.
I remember him having green. It had green lights on the dashboard of his Sierra that my granddad bought him.
Oh man,
I remember that being an amazing thing. Like what?
Oh man.
But now you can press a button and it makes a farting noise.
That's
where innovation's got to. Just the messing about age.
You know, bus stops or school buses. I mean, you see a lot of these rent people. Fortunately, there's not as many people blowing through them right now, but I still do see people blow through the stop sign.
I've got a solution to this.
What's your solution?
The stop sign should be a stinger.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, the little spike strips.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
They just put do what you want.
Spike strip rolls out, they roll it back.
I've got no problem with that. In fact, STS or RTA or Dubai Police, whoever wants to get involved with this, I will fit them for free. You just provide them and we'll fit them for free.
Wouldn't that be nice? We get 100.3 involved here.
Just deploy these stingers and stop people driving. Because when we get like four or five stop outside our house in the morning, and we're still, where we live is relatively still pretty much a business building site, but it's getting more every single day. There's someone else moving into the neighborhood, so it's getting busier and busier and busier. So, you know, you'll see people that the bus stops, and buses here, when they press the brake to stop, they have like 19 hazard lights on there that are flashing at you, plus the big red lights.
Yeah.
And then the big red stop sign folds out of the side.
Yeah, it clearly says stop.
And the reason they tell you to stop is because there's a kid that's potentially going to cross in front of the bus and you're not going to see them until the last second.
It's not a might stop. It's not maybe stop.
How long is it? Even if the whole bus was getting off and then getting back on again, it's a minute.
And look, I've always said this is to folks who are impatient because they're late for work. Get up earlier, people.
Yeah.
But... If the driver knows the kid hasn't come out of the door to the house yet, I've always had drivers, because I'm sitting there, they can see me, they close the door, sign goes in, let you by, or wave you by, and then...
Of them wave you past before they set off.
You got to be really careful if they're waving you past with the stop sign out, because a lot of them now have cameras.
Yeah. Well, I say,
if
they're not going to go for the stinger, then I say put cameras on there.
And more of them have cameras now, so it's definitely beware.
Yeah, I'm guessing on that though. It's not linked up to the automatic It's going to flash you. It's effectively a dash cam that the driver has to use to report someone.
So beware. Be safe.
It's not cool. There's no reason for that. No need for it at all.
Glenn, we've gone through the list pretty nicely, but we've got a lot more to do. And unfortunately, I got to go to work. You've got to go to work. So we got to cut the podcast short. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, no matter how you're listening to us. Again, if you're listening to the PowerWorks podcast online from your favorite streaming service, thank you very much. Please like us. Please send through comments. If you're watching us on YouTube and Spotify, because you can watch on Spotify as well, thank you also. And please share the links. And if you're listening to us on 100.3, thank you very much for spending the time and being here with us. That's 100.3 in Dubai. We are broadcast live on terrestrial radio as well. So welcome all of you. And Glenn, as always, this has been a lot of fun. We'll do it again really, really soon. Any words of wisdom as we depart?
Always stop for the stop sign on the side of a school bus, please.
You've been listening to the PowerWorks podcast. Talk to you again soon.